This is Sixth Canto, Chapter 5, Text Number 36. Prajapati Daksha said, I can repeat.
O Narada,
you wear the dress of a saintly person. But you are not actually a saint. Indeed, although I am now in Grihastha life, I am a saintly person. By showing my sons the path of renunciation, you have done me an abominable injustice. I think we have a few incarnations of Prajapati Daksha nowadays. The internet people. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Quite long purport, so it must be an important verse. Right? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Sanyasira Alpa Chidra Sarvaloke Gai. Majjhalila 12:51. In society, one will find many sannyasis, vanaprasthas, grihasthas, and brahmacharis. But if all of them properly live in accordance with their duties, they are understood to be sadhu. Daksha was certainly a sadhu because he had executed such great austerities that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, had appeared before him. That was when he did the Hansaguya prayer thing. That was after, I think, his second birth, after he got his goat's head. Nevertheless, he had a fault-finding mentality. He improperly thought Narada to be asadhu, or unthinking, because Narada had foiled his intentions. Desiring to train his sons to become grihasthas, fully equipped with knowledge, Daksha had sent them to execute austerities by the Narayana Saras. Narada Muni, however, taking advantage of their highly elevated position in austerity, instructed them to become Vaishnavas in the renounced order. This is the duty of Narada Muni and his followers. They must show everyone the path of renouncing this material world and returning home back to Godhead. Prajapati Daksha, however, could not see the exaltedness of the duties Narada Muni performed in relation to his son. Unable to appreciate Narada Muni's behavior, Daksha accused Narada of being asadhu. Who were the followers of Narada Muni? Supposed to be. We're all followers of Narada Muni. He's the first. He learned from Brahmaji, but Brahma basically only taught Narada, then he gave him the instruction to teach the rest of the universe. So he travels around and teaches so many people and has been coming down and he's still around. And the Bhagavatam, we find Narada Muni to be one of the main speakers. The word Bhikshor Marga, the path to the renounced order, are very significant in this regard. A sannyasi is called a Tridandi Bhikshu because his duty is to beg alms from the homes of grihasthas and to give the grihasthas spiritual instructions. A sannyasi is allowed to beg from door to door, but a grihastha cannot do that. Grihasthas may earn their living according to four divisions of spiritual life. A brahmana grihastha may earn his livelihood by becoming a learned scholar and teaching people in general how to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He may also assume the duty of worship himself. Therefore, it is said that the only brahmanas may engage in deity worship and they may accept as prasad whatever people offer the deity. They have to be careful about that, though. I just heard a story from Tirupati. Somebody donated a big diamond. And one of the pujaris, he had a bunch of daughters and they needed to get married. So somehow he managed to steal that diamond. This was some time ago. Now they have much more security. And then he, you know, hid it away for a while. Then he went to Bombay to sell the diamond. And he went to a diamond shop. You know, Bombay's got how many diamond shops? Thousands of them, right? And the guy said, oh, and he looked at the diamond and said, come back, you know, in the afternoon, I'll tell you, you know, how much you can have for it. And he came back and the police were waiting for him. That diamond shop was the owner of that shop was the guy who donated the diamond. And he recognized it. So you're not entitled to everything that's donated to the deity, you're just entitled to it. But now many of these pujaris in the big temples, they do live like that. They beg from door to door. I was in Jaipur and the pujari from Radha Govinda came begging for money for his daughter's wedding at the house I was staying. And he said, well, I like him. I gave it. He dresses the deities nicely. I gave him money. But that's not exactly Varnashram. But the sannyasis can beg, but it's not for themselves. And selling books for a grihastha, that's not exactly begging either. That's like begging for yourself is considered very low, but begging on behalf of Krishna is the highest occupation. Although a brahmana may sometimes accept charity, it is not for its personal maintenance, but for the worship of the deity. Thus, a brahmana does not stock anything for his future use. Similarly, kshatriyas may collect taxes from the citizens, and they must also protect the citizens, enforce rules and regulations, and maintain law and order. Vaishyas should earn their livelihood through agriculture and cow protection, and shudras should maintain their livelihood by serving the three higher castes, classes, higher classes. Unless one becomes a brahmana, one cannot take sannyas. Sannyasis and brahmanas may beg alms door to door, but a grihastha cannot. Prajapati Daksha condemned Narada Muni because Narada, a brahmachari who could beg from door to door, had made sannyasis of Daksha's sons who were being trained to be grihasthas. Daksha was extremely angry at Narada because he thought that Narada had done him a great injustice. According to Daksha's opinion, Narada Muni had misled Daksha's inexperienced sons, Asad Bakar Yabakar Bakanam. Daksha regarded his sons as innocent boys who had been misled when Narada showed them the renounced order of life. Because of all these considerations, Prajapati Daksha charged that Narada was an asadhu and should not have adopted the dress of a sadhu. Sometimes a saintly person is misunderstood by grihasthas, especially when he instructs their young sons to accept Krishna consciousness. Generally, a grihastha thinks that unless one enters grihastha life, he cannot properly enter the renounced order. If a young man immediately adopts the path of the renounced order in accordance with the instructions of Narada, or a member of the disciplic succession, his parents become very angry. The same phenomena is occurring in our Krishna conscious movement because we are instructing all the young boys in the Western countries to follow the path of renunciation, and girls. We allow grihastha life, but a grihastha also follows the path of renunciation. Even a grihastha has to give up so many bad habits that his parents think his life has been practically destroyed. We allow no meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling, and no intoxication. And consequently, the parents wonder how, if there are so many no's, one's life can be positive. In the Western countries, especially, these four prohibited activities practically constitute the life and soul of the modern population. Therefore, parents sometimes dislike our movement, just as Daksha Prajapati disliked the activities of Narda and accused Narda of dishonesty. Like in America, we had those deprogrammers, so there was one guy that kind of started it in an organized way, and he would call up parents and say, you know, Mom, they don't let your kid drink no beer at that Hare Krishna. Yeah. American kids got to have beer. You know, they don't let them eat no meat. You know, they're going to starve. You got to get them out of there. We'll get them out of there for you. You know, just pay $10,000 or $20,000 or something, and kidnap, make sure that your kid can eat meat and drink beer again. And the parents would go for it. Other things also, because they really thought this is like, because they don't chant, they don't know the ecstasy of chanting, and if we don't chant, you know, carefully and attentively and keep the vow that we take for chanting 16 rounds, then, you know, we might start wanting to do some of these things also. Otherwise, the mind may, you know, gravitate, but it won't. Krishna will always protect the devotee who is seriously chanting. And that pleasure of chanting is so much greater than the pleasure one can get. I remember people asking us, you know, what do you do for fun? You don't drink, you don't, you know, smoke, don't have sex. How can you live? And we're thinking, how can you live with those things? Because, you know, but people, even Daksha, who, you know, had done great austerity and had recited all these wonderful prayers, that though they're prayers from the Vedas, he didn't make them up, those Hansaguya prayers, but still he's so much bewildered and attached to his life. Nonetheless, although parents may be angry, we must perform our duty without hesitation because we are in the disciplic succession from Narada Muni. People addicted to householder life wonder how one can give up the enjoyment of grihastha life, which is a concession for sex enjoyment, simply to become a mendicant in Krishna consciousness. They do not know that the householder's concession for sex cannot be regulated unless one accepts the life of a mendicant. The Vedic civilization, therefore, enjoins that one, at the end of one's 50th year, one must give up household life. This is compulsory. However, because modern civilization is misled, householders want to remain in family life until death, and therefore they are suffering. In such cases, the disciples of Narada Muni advise all the members of the younger generation to join the Krishna consciousness movement immediately. There's nothing wrong in this. Om Agana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurumilitanena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah Shri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kiramayam Dharati Shvaparantikam Pandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sajajatam Sahagana Raghunathanditam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Savadutam Padishana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Ditam Pancha Kalpa Charubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Krishna Todiya Pada Pankaja Panjarantama Jayvame Visatu Manasaraja Hansan Prana Pranama Samaye Kapapata Vittai Kantavaro Dhanavido Smaranam Kutaste. So a lot there. Prabhupada's writing this is at the time of the deprogrammers and all those, you know, very angry parents. There's one conversation that occurred here in London. The mother came and one boy, and she was, you know, criticizing Prabhupada that he was not encouraging his students to go to the university, and she was saying, you went to the university, and Prabhupada was saying, well, you know, if we need a doctor, there's plenty of doctors, you know, we're training to be priests, and she was, said they need a material education. So, you know, she was trying to say like the devotees had taken the son out of the school, but actually that he'd already quit the school, and then one devotee told the mother, you know, he was taking LSD, and Prabhupada said, were you happy that he was taking LSD? Well, he was experimenting. And she just went on and on. Prabhupada tried really hard, and she brought the priest with her, from the church, and, you know, but he was more or less understanding. But Prabhupada never advised, like when devotees did, that when someone was in the university, Prabhupada, you know, would tell them to finish. Borijan Prabhu and many others did finish. But if they'd already dropped out, he didn't tell them to go back. They want to dedicate their life to preaching and you know, becoming sadhu and becoming, you know, representatives of Narada Muni, then that's what the world really needs. And whatever our material qualification is, we want to use it in that way. So he's using the word grihastha here, but we know what our grihastha means, you know, it's for Krishna. So it's not, it's all right, it's fine. Even someone's old, but if the husband and wife are working together for preaching or running a temple or something like that, that's not sense gratification. It's very effective, sometimes very powerful. It's like this whole English preaching was started by married couples. You know, they came and somehow they established all this. And Prabhupada was very happy with that. He said his sannyasi godbrothers, they couldn't do it. But renunciation means that we give up these sinful activities and we give everything to Krishna. But now that we don't have anything left, actually Prabhupada explained that we have nothing to give. Everything belongs to Krishna anyway. So all we can do is give up the idea that it's mine and that it's meant for my enjoyment. I've been asking every class, does anybody here know what the word fruitive means? Anybody? Somebody must know.
Something which produces fruit.
Yeah. Something like that. The dictionary, it's not in the regular dictionary, it's in the unabridged dictionary. It's in the Veda base 3,424 times. And devotees don't know what it means, generally. But it literally means for enjoyment. So that's why Prabhupada used it so many times. And in Prabhupada's time it was a common word, I guess. Yeah, but now it's not. Although once in a while they talk about getting a fruit of your labor or something like that. But for enjoyment. So if we're working just for our own personal enjoyment, sense gratification, then in any ashram that's condemned, if a sannyasi or a grihastha or a brahmaprastha or a brahmachari is just working, you know, for sense gratification. We find that mentality in all ashrams and in all different religious movements even. You know, we have priests that are very renounced. They have priests that are, you know, living like kings, better than kings, right? And that we have that all over the world. But the real thing is from the Bhagavatam is everything belongs to Krishna, so everything's meant for Krishna. And everyone is meant to give their life to Krishna. That's what human life is. Otherwise human life is doesn't have any value, no matter how much material success one has. Daksha literally means expert. And what was he expert at? Sex, yeah, producing children. So he had so many. This time, first he had 10,000 sons, and Narada Muni preached to them, and they all gave up, you know, they all renounced, went out on Sankirtan. Then he had 1,000 sons, and they did it again. That's what. Then he had a daughter, and Narada Muni didn't bother the daughter. But, you know, he's so angry, so that that particular expertise. It's going to lead him to make offenses to devotees, especially to Narada Muni, who is actually his brother, you know, Daksha, the first sons of Brahma. But Narada, he was created, you know, Brahma made those Manasaputras. From his mind was coming the seven rishis and the different sons, and then he thought there should be one personality in the universe that he was thinking very carefully, that has nothing to do except to preach bhakti, except to teach. And then from that contemplation, Narada Muni came. He didn't need a wife for the making his children, just popping out from his thinking. I don't know if there's anyone like that. They talk about now you can have designer children, genetically design your children, right? I mean, you can't do it yet, but someday. But Brahma knew, you know, all of it was put into him by Krishna. All the creation was already there, but then he was just letting it happen. So he trained Narada. He'd heard the Bhagavatam in the four verses from Krishna. Then he, in the second canto, we have him teaching Narada, and he's telling Narada about, you know, Krishna Leela and all the, you know, Vrindavan and all the things Krishna's going to do. And, you know, that's why Narada was so anxious to push Krishna's Leela ahead, you know. And so he went to Kamsa and told him that, you know, it could be any one of the children, you know. To hurry up so Krishna would come quicker, because he wanted Krishna to take birth. So, and then he's totally surrendered. And so he can go anywhere in the universe without any problem, without any visa, without any tickets, passport, you know, he can go anywhere. We find in Ramayana, Mahabharata, Narada Muni just walks in on Ravana, everybody, you know, they're all afraid of him because they have some culture and they know if they offend a great sage or sadhu like that, then it'll be a disaster for their whole kingdom. So everybody welcomes Narada Muni, Kamsa, you know, anybody, and great kings, great devotees, Krishna, everyone is anxious to see Narada Muni. And he's just simply giving the kirtan, he's giving knowledge of Krishna, he's giving, you know, spiritual knowledge. He's preaching to Dhruva, he's the guru of Dhruva, Prahlad Maharaj, and King Prachini Bharichad, and then later on he's preaching to Vasudeva, you know, the father of Krishna. He's preaching to Yudhisthira. You know, he's the guru of everyone. And he's the head of our disciplic succession. So we're meant to do that either. Probably this final line, you know, everyone, there's nothing wrong with telling everyone to join the Krishna consciousness movement. We should remember that, because sometimes now, and we tend to tell people they have to develop their material life first. But if somebody wants to surrender, whatever ashram they're in though, someone has a family, we're not telling them you have to leave, but join the movement, join. Preach, you know, give up the sinful activities. Take, you know, eat prasadam, chant the holy name, you know, worship the deities. Don't have to go to the casino, and you don't have to, you know, eat all kinds of, even boga, you know, vegetarian boga, but just do everything for Krishna, then everyone can be happy. That's what the world needs, you know, there's so many things everyone is noticing what's wrong. But people just want to be happy, but they can't be. The material world is created by Krishna, Dukkalayama Shastratam. It's created for temporary and misery. And it's very nicely created. And it always provides, right? Birth, death, disease, old age. We all experience all of these things. Nobody gets out of it. Birth, we never remember. The woman who gives birth may remember. The baby doesn't remember, generally. But then they have to grow up, and there's so many childhood diseases that no one can avoid in spite of all the vaccines and everything that they have, right? You get them, and we keep, so many things are going wrong every minute with the body, the mind, and now it's all mental disease because it's Kali Yuga, and people are more and more separated from Krishna. They're more and more identifying with their body and their mind, and they have no idea that they're the eternal blissful soul. So we're trying to teach people that, and we're trying to learn for ourselves that, you know, who am I? What, you know, we're not, what is the soul? What is the nature of the soul? Some look upon the soul as not as egoic. Think of it, you know, look upon the soul as amazing. It's an amazing thing. It's eternal, blissful. I was looking in the Dandabat this morning, and there was something about devotees are getting some contagious disease. The headline said, you know, and it said, you know, because they're eating a prasadam and they're eating off each other's plate, so the contagious disease is spreading amongst the devotees. And then it explained it. Satchitananda, you know, the devotees are becoming blissful because they're eating the remnants of Krishna and the remnants of the devotees. The Prabhupada said, it's like a disease, you know, that once you get that seed of the holy name and serving Krishna, then it spreads throughout the body like just like poison does. And one becomes, you know, more and more aware. We want to know, I mean, what is the nature of Krishna? He's Satchitananda. He's completely pure, blissful, Ananda. The soul is blissful. The soul is not, you know, subjected to all these changes. Yeah, because it's part and parcel of Krishna. Not as great as Krishna, but the same qualities. So we should understand that when we're thinking about who we are, when we're chanting, when we're serving. You know, the body is what it is. The mind is flickering and unsteady. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that. The mind and the soul are always at odds with each other. You know, they don't get along because the mind is always flickering and unsteady and changing, you know, happy one minute, unhappy the next minute. But the soul is always blissful. That is the nature of the soul. And by chanting the holy name, that we recognize that, we can experience that. And if we can chant, the more we can chant, the more we chant, and the more we connect and experience, connect with Krishna. That's it. First step, Sambandha, to connect with Krishna. Radha Madan Mohan, we connect with Krishna. Then we want to connect people with Krishna. We give them a book, we give them prasadam, you know, whatever they can take. We give them the holy name. And people love it. They don't have to know what it is. When we just went for, well, Jananda Maharaj was the other day in Soho, and he'd been just Harinam in so many countries in the last few weeks, and he was telling us about all these, and how all the people come out and they're so blissful and happy and joining in, no matter what kind of people, all these gothic guys, you know, they come and dance and chant, and drunken, crazy people, and some of the, where he was just, some of these places in England described how they're so low-class drunks, but everybody was in ecstasy to see behind them. We went to around Soho on Saturday, and you know, it was unbelievable how many people join in, how many people just, they can't believe it. They don't know what it is even, most of them, but they just love it. And then take so many pictures. So they go home and then they look through their pictures and then they remember again Krishna, right? They take movies. It gets all over the world. It gets on television. And the devotees become very happy to see so many people joining in the chanting. But it's attractive to everyone, and we're trying to tell everyone, just do this. You know, you don't need, for your own happiness, you don't need, we need to maintain our life, but for happiness, we need Krishna. There's nothing else, you know, no amount of accumulation of things is going to make anybody happy. It actually just usually creates anxiety. And we might lose our things. The yuppies in America, I saw one card had a license plate holder. It said, he who dies with the most toys is successful or something. you know, has the most designer clothes and the most proper car and watch and all the things that they were supposed to have, the certain brands, you know. And then someone else put one, he who dies with the most toys and still dies. So, you know, everybody is going to die. And if they think they're their body, then that's very, you know, frightening. They think it's the end. You know, they don't know where they're going to go. They're wondering. But for a person who's God-conscious, they're not disturbed. When that Mataji, what's her name, Sangeeta, she was with Bhaktivedanta Swami, and she was saying, well, you can't really compare when devotees are leaving their body to the way karmis leave their body. Devotees are happy about it. So like Narmada Swami, he was very old. He worked very hard in Krishna consciousness for many, many years, and he became very crippled up. He couldn't do the work that he normally did. And he was painful. He wanted to leave his body, and he went to Vrindavan, and for so long he didn't. He was taking only juice and only water, then he wouldn't, and he just wouldn't leave his body. He tried like anything. And I saw him a couple of days before, and he looked quite all right. You know, he was a little skinny, but his face was all bright, and his beard was all healthy, and he was happy. Finally, he was able to leave. But he wanted to. And he tried, but it's only when Krishna wants. But he wasn't complaining. You know, devotees, the Krishna comes to take the devotee away. He doesn't see that Yamaduta is. He's not fearful what's going to happen, because whatever we've done, if we've tried to be devotees all our lives, and at the time of death, Krishna makes sure to take care. Daksha couldn't understand that, so he's condemning Narada Muni. We know how he cursed him later. He cursed him that he couldn't stay anywhere more than 3 days. Because it being attached to the house, he thought that would be the worst thing. You have to keep moving. But for Narada, he didn't stay anywhere, so it didn't make any difference. Then when Narada was in Vrindavan, he went to Vrindavan because he wanted to join the Rasa dance or something. And then Krishna told him he should stay in Vrindavan and write, you know, as he wrote. And he said, well, I can't stay because I've got this curse. You know, I have to move. He said, no, that curse is only in the material world. But in Vrindavan, it's okay, we can stay. So Narada stayed there, and he wrote those Narada Bhakta Sutras and some other book. There's a place called Narada Kund that's near Kusum Sarovar. You go over a little bit. Very beautiful place. Narada spent his few months there writing these books. So that curse didn't really affect Narada Muni. And it was a blessing. And Prabhupada explains that the parents of his disciples are cursing him also. So he has to keep moving. He even said sometimes if people knew what I was doing, they would kill me. He explained that that's why many people, they're against us, because, you know, they think that life depends on the gambling and intoxication, meat eating, illicit sex, because it's their business. You know, there's so much of the economy is based on those things, right? In Japan, they have this thing called mizushobai, I mean, water business, the drinking places. And, you know, so much is connected to all the people that work there and the people that wash the dishes and the people that do so many things, and everybody goes out drinking. It's a huge portion of their economy. So like if they think that you're going to stop people from drinking or eating meat or going to the prostitutes, you know, and gambling. Now gambling has become, you know, the governments everywhere are making huge casinos. I had experience one time. There was one in Chicago airport. There was one undercover policeman. He used to harass us all the time, especially harass me. And he would stand behind me, don't take the books, Hare Krishna. And then I would joke around, you know, try to make... And so one time I went downstairs, we had the books in lockers, and I saw him sitting in a restaurant with somebody. And I said, well, Joe, how are you doing? And the guy with him just started, you know, hissing like a snake, and said, get out of here, I don't want to see you. And I said, what's wrong? And he said, this is, you know, I live, this is my bar, this, I live by selling whiskey and meat, and you people are against it, you know. So that's, you know, they get worried. The four pillars of their society, gambling, illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and, you know, we're knocking those pillars out from under them. And they can't understand that a society can live on truthfulness and tapasya, and, you know, and everybody can be much happier, and everybody can work, and there'll be plenty of food for everybody, but they can work in proper things. When I was first going to the temple, we would get questions all the time, like, what would happen if everybody was a Hare Krishna? Because devotees always talking, when you take over the world, everybody be a devotee, and people were thinking, what will happen, you know, how will the world go on? Because they thought Hare Krishnas are only the guys dancing out in the street, and if everybody's doing that, then how are we going to eat and sleep and, you know, maintain? But they don't know about a whole society, that everybody can be a Hare Krishna. We said it would be great. We have to keep that mentality, that that's what Prabhupada wanted. You find it in almost every purport and every lecture. You know, our business is to preach, our business is to give this to everyone, you know, present Krishna to everyone, give books to everyone, you know, distribute prasadam unlimitedly, and chant the holy name anywhere and everywhere, all the time, you know, and give it to everyone. That's what the world needs. All the other things that they're trying to do, it isn't helping anybody. They just get in more anxiety, or they just find a new way to do the same thing and think that each time they think it is, one will be all right. We'll get electricity by another way, right? We'll get cars that run on something else besides oil. But they still have to have factories to make all those things. And we think that if we can't change our consciousness and turn it towards Krishna, and we have to think about, you know, agriculture. As the food prices go up and the quality of the food is going down regularly. The food that they're selling is getting more and more expensive and the quality is getting less. No vitamins, no taste. The taste they put in, you know. If you go in most supermarkets now, you know, the majority is what we call junk food. They call junk food. Just packaged up stuff, cooked in factories, coming from all over the world, no matter where you are. Even the fresh produce is coming from so many different places. We used to go to the big market in Japan, and it's such a big produce market that they throw away something like 16 tons every day. You know, things that get a little bit old, they just throw it away. And you know, we'd see the boxes that come from every conceivable country in the world. You know, South America, South Africa, a few things from Japan, from maybe I didn't see much from England, from America, from, you know, so many places they're bringing. So much transportation, so much trouble. And at the same time, they're training everyone that they should work in factories and they should be engineers and, you know, and then young people don't want to be farmers and they get worried about that. But farming, Prabhupada said, is the most noble occupation of a grihastha. And then for offering to Krishna, if we're growing everything and from the ground up, you know, it's much nicer. You know, if you cook it, and devotees, high-class devotees cook it with good conscience, that's, but if devotees were growing it all the way, then it's much better to offer to Krishna as far as consciousness and as far as quality would go. So we do not want to be like Daksha. Now, I was reading this and I just, you know, like I don't read most of these things on the internet, I hear about them, but there's so many people blasting away at all the preachers in our movement. You know, how they're not really devoted and they're really demons and they're doing all these things wrong. They're all like followers of Daksha. They should be followers of Narada Muni. Narada Muni, when he went around trying to find it in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, he was looking for the who got the most mercy of Krishna. So you all know this story, right? He went up and up, and everybody said, no, not me, you know. And Lord Brahma said, not me, you should go to this one and that one. I can't remember the exact order. And he got to the Pandavas, and Pandavas are saying, no, not us, look how much we suffered, you know. And actually it's the Yadus, and then finally got to Uddhava. And Uddhava, when Narada started praising him and saying, you must be the, you know, the most recipient of Krishna's mercy and there's no one like you, Uddhava, in his heart, he didn't accept that, but he picked up on Narada's mood and he let him say that. He didn't argue with him. And then, but then he told him about the gopis. And then Narada met Krishna, and Krishna was very happy to see Narada, and he asked him, you know, take any benediction. That's the nature of Krishna, and he wants to give benedictions. So we have to be careful what we ask for, because if we take the wrong things, it can become burdens. So Narada said he'd like to, that devotees would never be satisfied that they'd done enough service. They'd always want to do more and more. And he asked for that benediction. And Krishna said that is the nature of devotees anyway, so that you don't have to ask for them. You should ask for something else. Right? What did he ask for? Huh? Anybody know? He asked if he could always travel everywhere and inspire everyone to chant and dance Hare Krishna. Krishna said, good. That's a good benediction. You can have it. Of course, he was already doing that. So that's what we want. You know, we want to be utilized. I saw one church in Singapore. There's one big church there, and one of the oldest Methodist church in the middle of Singapore, right in India, Little India, actually. It's right in the middle of Little India. And so they put these different signs outside. They used to have one that said, let go and let God. That was pretty good. Then they had one, they had four signs, and it said, if I can remember all of them, but it said, catch me or something. Then it had a picture of a heart. It said, melt me. Then it said, mold me. Then it said, use me. Oh, that was pretty good. Huh? They're praying to God like that. Please take me, melt my heart, mold it into something that you can use in your service. You know, as many people want that. That's what we want. We want to be utilized by Krishna. But for what? You know, for, of course, developing our own relationship with Krishna, but that is enhanced by preaching, by, you know, that's our sadhana, actually. Part of our sadhana is preaching. Sadhana is anything that helps us, you know, to chant more. So if we're giving the holy name, then Krishna is pleased. And the more people are chanting, the more we'll chant also. And the more we give it, the more we'll get to feel that reciprocation, that ecstasy. Or the more we give books, you know, if we're always telling people, like, there's one offense to the holy name to blaspheme the Vedic literature, but if one is always praising the Vedic literature and telling other people that they should read it, you know, we'll certainly avoid that offense. Right? If you're distributing books, you don't go out and tell people, well, I'm not sure about some of the things in this book, but, you know, they're interesting, maybe. Right? No, you tell them, this is great, this is going to change your life, this is, you know, this is completely spiritual. I hope, you know, this is totally spiritual. Solve all problems of life. And it will. If someone, you know, takes up the Bhagavad, they actually read it, they actually try to follow, they take up chanting Hare Krishna, then they will. You know, we have millions of people. We see the power of the holy name. How many people have given up all, you know, even very, very degraded life. Not everybody. I met some old Indian guy the other day on the Oxford Street. He'd been around the movement here since, you know, the early time. And he was saying, like, Prabhupada, like, the way he talked was that all the disciples Prabhupada made were drunkards and alcoholics. You know, but he saved them. And some of us were. But many were not. And that doesn't even matter, but the power of the holy name that, and sometimes even more amazing than someone that is a successful materialist, I mean, it's absorbed in making money and apparently really enjoying the material world, will give it up, you know, and give it all for Krishna, utilize it all for Krishna, and give up, you know, all the sense gratification he could be having that is supposedly legitimate sense gratification. But Prabhupada that Bhagavatam, the holy name, can get anybody in any country. Africa is full of singing and dancing Hare Krishnas. They love it. And of course everyone is a spirit soul, so everyone is attracted to Krishna. Everyone wants to be with Krishna. Everyone wants to sing and dance all the time because that's the natural activity of the Goloka. So we have, you know, we have Narada Muni. We can choose. Do we want to be like Daksha and just fault find all the time, criticize devotees? Right? Because that propensity is there in everyone, especially in Kali Yuga. Fault finding is considered to be like intelligent, intellectual, right? Expert at fault finding. It's really the mode of ignorance, but intellectual people that write movie reviews and this and that, and newspapers criticizing the governments and everything, they're expert at fault finding. But it's actually tamasic. One should be glorifying the Supreme Lord, and then if this, that will automatically, and glorifying the devotees of the Lord, those who are serving the Lord, then that'll purify the whole atmosphere and help everyone. The holy name of Krishna is so powerful that it purifies the whole atmosphere. Not only the person who's chanting, but every living entity that hears it. Even the inanimate things get purified. They start to vibrate, you know. That's why the temple is very nice, because inside the temple room has been for so many years only chanting and only talking about Krishna. So the whole place is nice. Even if you come in and there's no one else in there, you know, it's got that effect. There's many cities where we go to the same place and chant, you know, Harinam regularly for many years. And if you just walk by there, and the people, some people, of course, they've seen the devotees and they remember that when they walk by that, oh yeah, that I saw the Hare Krishnas there. They're looking for them, or are they, you know, haven't seen you guys for a long time. That's one question we get in many places. We don't like to hear that. We're happy that people are happy to see us, but it's not so nice that they haven't seen devotees for so many years. They used to see devotees all the time. I have one Mataji there in Greece, and she's quite an amazing, she was a hippie, but she just joined immediately that she saw the Harinam party. She was sleeping up in the mountain and she came in. She would just sing and dance and get money. And she saw the Harinam and she just joined. Totally surrendered. I'm really far out. And just studies all the time and does Harinam every day and making devotees. But her parents in the 1973 or something were studying in London. And so then there was that big Harinam every day on Oxford Street. And they saw that all the time. So when she was a baby, her father used to just joke around in the kitchen and take a pot and a spoon and jump around and sing Hare Krishna. She said it was one of the most things that she can't forget from her childhood. So she hadn't thought about it, but when she saw the devotees, she just joined. The mother said, look what you did to your daughter. But now the mother is quite interested also, you know, really bringing all her friends to hear the philosophy and everything. But that's the power of the Harinam. People, they don't even know what it is, but they, you know, they're just attracted to see that joyful thing and to hear that sound vibration of Krishna and spreading all over the world. But we have to make sure it keeps going. That's what temples are for. We send people out chanting, or to have chanting all the time in the temple, you know, so that anyone who comes, you know, is exposed. Now they're having this Harinam week. Holy Name Week is coming up, right? What is it? September 13th to the 21st. It's a 9-day week. It's a long week. So Jananda Maharaj is pushing that. Everybody should get out, try to have more Harinam, or have 24-hour kirtan in the temple or something. They just had that 24-hour kirtan in New Vrindavan, and still everybody is talking about how it was the best thing they ever. You know, I had one devotee in America, Japanese, he didn't eat or sleep, which is not normal for him, but he was in so much ecstasy. He said, I can't wait till next year. You know, is it like that all the time in India? He just stayed in the temple room in 24 hours. You know, just never ending, another kirtan, another kirtan. And, you know, that's our business. That's the spiritual world. And everybody can enjoy that. They can come and go as they like. And we can take shelter of Nardamuni, play Dravina, and chant the holy name. And he teaches the science of Krishna also, sometimes in very mysterious ways, sometimes very straightforward. You know, and he's our leader. And he's, you know, we can be like that if we really surrender to Nardamuni, then we can also be this complete freedom. People think that when you surrender, then you're like locked up, but actually, when you surrender to Krishna, then you get unlocked up. Everybody's locked up by lust and greed and anger, and, you know, grosser people are prophets, and they're bound up in the shackles of sex desire. You see how it is advertised everywhere, and, you know, people are suffering like anything. And they want to be free. Like Vishnu Bhar tells people, this is about freedom, these books. Freedom from birth, death, disease, and old age. It shocks people. How can you get free from that? But that's, nobody wants those things. Nobody wants at least death and old age and disease. They may think birth is nice. They celebrate when someone's born, but whoever is born is bound to die. And then when people die, devotees celebrate, but the mundane people, they don't celebrate. They lament and cry, and they can't understand the soul. But if you know the soul, then other people's dying, of course, we might miss their association, but we're happy for them. They can go back to Krishna and be free from all the difficulties of living in the material world. And if we're living in the material world, then we just inspire you to push on it. And just make plans how to, perhaps to go on with their lifetime plans to distribute books and distribute Krishna one way or another. Just keep thinking about it. When we're talking, we should be planning, how to do those things. And everything else just automatically falls into place. Krishna is the supreme controller. No one can understand the plan of the Lord. All kinds of things happen that, we can't, why would this happen, and why is Krishna doing this? But then we always find out that, it always works out for the better, whatever it is. Things may get very good, things may get apparently bad, disease, or poverty, or whatever can happen, but in the long run, it's always Krishna's, for devotees, only trying to help a devotee too. Give up everything and take full shelter of Krishna. We have nothing else. We theoretically at least can know that. We hear it every time we listen to any kind of lecture, every time we read any Bhagavatam, surrender to Krishna. Prabhupada told us one time, he said, I have nothing new ever to say. Every day the class is the same. Surrender to Krishna, chant Hare Krishna, Krishna is God. So he was thanking us for coming. He said, if you come, that means you have love for Krishna, because it's the same thing every day. It's nothing, it's not like you're going to come and get something new and different and more nectar. You're just going to get Krishna. But if we continue to hear faithfully, and then we get Krishna. If we just keep wanting Krishna, we want to chant the holy name, we want the mercy of Lord Nityananda, then you get out of Maya. Then Bhaktivinoda said, Name Rahate Te Diviyadikar. Then you get empowered to be an agent of the marketplace of the holy name and distribute the holy name. When you take shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda, then you get rid of Maya. Unlimited mercy is there. It's there for everyone. It's not like Krishna is choosing who to give mercy to. We choose whether we're going to take it or not, to make a decision, that's all. If I want the mercy or not. So Krishna is there for everyone. Prabhupada's mercy is there for everyone. Service is there for everyone. There's nothing further to be gained if we have devotional service, if we have the holy name. So I want to thank here. I know there's a lot of book distributors in the manor now. I saw the marathon meeting distributing many, many books. But there's no limit, you know, there's so many people who still have never heard of Krishna. So many. Ajahn Anandamayi was talking about some of the towns he went to for Harinam. No devotee had ever done Harinam before. Even in England, a few places, they're hardly ever done. And some other checklist. And people just come out like an ecstasy. Indradana Maharaj is writing, he went to one town in Australia where the devotees had never done Harinam, and the devotees were thinking, this town's, you know, a little bit, they're puffed up, it's not going to be a good place, you know. People were flipping out and saying, you know, we've been waiting 25 years for you to come to our town. You know, where have you been? Because they knew devotees from the other cities or something. And that's how people are. They're waiting all over the world. Just waiting to meet a devotee and connect with Krishna. They're not going to connect with Krishna any other way. Devotees just need to make themselves available and work on connecting ourselves with Krishna also, and all the other devotees. Maintaining, finding out what that relationship is, sambandha, abhideya, you know, utilizing that connection, finding our service, serving Krishna, remembering Krishna, then prayojan, perfection of Sri Prabhupada. This progress is there for everything we're doing, is working on that. Serve the devotees, and Krishna is pleased at service to Krishna. And the higher consciousness, devotee sees everyone as a devotee, every living entity. Doesn't want to offend anybody, he just wants to give Krishna, or give Krishna. So we thank Narada Muni for, Prabhupada said, what is it in the first canon? We thank Narada Muni for kindly appearing on these pages. All throughout the Bhagavatam, he's always there. Throughout Ramayana, he keeps popping up. Throughout the Mahabharata, Narada Muni keeps dropping in. Always the same, and always humorous, and always giving Krishna to everyone. So we can connect with Narada Muni by just thinking, how can I, you know, give Krishna? Even if we just wear tilak and people see it, they get connected to Krishna. If we go out looking like Hare Krishna a little bit, then anyone who sees us, even they don't know what it is, they get benefit. If they do know what it is, they get more benefit. We see on the Harinam in London, or the Muslim people are taking pictures, or they want to know what it is. All kinds of people. It's all attractive to everyone. Okay, any comment or question? Dish?
Just a quick one. You know in the booklet?
Yeah.
It says that it's forbidden for a Vyasa to beg it for begging.
Yeah.
But it's sanctioned for sannyasi.
Yeah.
You also know the ashram of the brahmachari. It's okay.
Yeah.
But the Prabhupada doesn't talk much about the lifestyle of the Vanaprastha. It's the occasion of the Bhagavatam conversation. I was wondering if, because it's a renowned order of life, it's a sanction for them, you know.
Probably, yeah, because there are places where it says there's only three, you know, only one, the grihastha is supposed to support all the other three. You know, the others are not income-earning ashrams in, by business and all those things, so it's sanctioned. And it means like a grihastha begging for his own maintenance, like begging for your own physical maintenance is the lowest topic. But in our society, a devotee, a grihastha can go and distribute books and ask for donations. Because he's begging, you know, for Krishna. It's different. And Vanaprastha Prabhupada didn't put much stress. And, you know, the traditional Vanaprastha is described in the seven canons. I don't think anybody's going to do that. You know. Never take a bath and cut their fingernails and, you know, live in the forest and all those things. But the Vanaprastha that gives up the, you know, business side and, you know, we got Bhagavad Shai here, the husband and wife is traveling and preaching, you know, that's completely renounced. It's not, you know, it's very exalted. Doesn't have to take sannyas or, you know, all those things. because the real sannyasi is one who is doing everything for Krishna. So our consideration of the varnashram ashrams is not exactly the same as the traditional vision of it, because we have daivi varnashram. Everyone is working for Krishna. So nobody should be begging on behalf of their bodily maintenance. You brahmachari, you know. Sometimes they do, especially in India. You know, they, oh, I need this, I need that. But if you're begging, you know, on behalf of the guru, then everything else is provided also, you know, begging for Krishna. It's a sadhana. In any religious, in the Christian monks, they beg, right? It's part of their sadhana. That's what St. Francis's people would beg, and then give it away. And Buddhist monks are supposed to do their takahatsu. They go begging. It develops humility and equanimity of mind, you know, because sometimes they're treated very nicely when you're begging. Sometimes you're kicked out, sometimes abused, sometimes praised. I mean, I've seen it on book distribution. One person will tell you, you know, get out of here and you're not supposed to do this, and, you know, nobody likes what you're doing. You know, you're the biggest disturbance in the society. And the next guy says, great, you know, keep it up. I'm really glad to see you guys out here. Right? So you can't get attached. If you get attached to either one, you know, the ones who get the focus on the ones that condemn us, then they quit. They don't want to do it anymore. If we're looking only for praise, then we won't find it all the time. We'll also give it up. But if we just realize this is a, you know, everything is the material world, we just equal in all those things. It's all coming from Krishna. And we just carry on trying to preach and be completely happy and empowered. So we should be begging for the holy name. Everyone should do that. Right? Doesn't matter what ashram you're in, you should be begging for a devotional service. Begging for association of devotees. Those are the benedictions that devotees ask for, great devotees. In all the Bhagavatamra, Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Krishna insists that they have to ask for a benediction, that's what they ask for. I want to always be with your devotees, or I always want to chant the holy name, I always want to remember you, I always want to be engaged in your service. They don't say, okay, give me, you know, a house by the sea, and a big boat, and a chauffeur, and, you know, a few girlfriends, a bank balance. I guess you could, and Krishna might give that, and that wouldn't make anyone happy. Any other?
I was just wanting to ask about the grihastha, because in the modern world now we have social security.
And what?
We have benefits, social security, yeah, and things like that. What if the grihastha says that he doesn't want to work, he just wants to carry on with his service, and he's a young grihastha, he's not vanaprastha. So what he prefers to do is to sign on social security, get benefit, but he doesn't work, and still that service. Is that bona fide?
I'm not sure legally how it is. Spiritually, it is, isn't it? You know, the government's supposed to support the Brahmins. The king in past ages supported the rishis' ashrams, where they were training brahmacharis and they were preaching. The government supported them. Nowadays, I know the government here, that some devotees have, on the basis that they're priests, they're getting their benefits, isn't it? But if he's just going to not, you know, if he's just going to live comfortably and without working and not do any service, then it's condemned. If he's actually a full-time devotee, then... if you can do it legally and not, you know, like, I know in America some devotees made all kinds of tricks, but then they weren't doing any service either. And then people really looked down on us. But if they see you're actually a priest and you're actually doing valuable work in society, And many people appreciate in England what this kind of is doing for society. That, you know, intelligent people, government, they appreciate it. It would be nice if the governments would give more support, you know, in any country to help the preaching go on. Prabhupada ask them to do that. Give us a place, you know, where we can hold festivals and distribute prasadam. They haven't done it yet, but some countries they do. Anything else? Yeah.
We did a social study about movement.
Yeah.
And now that when they came to the assembly, he said because it was such an elevated society, they recognized them, you know, offered respect, and probably felt valued, appreciated, like that. If you did a social study of our society, I think the really high turnover of people, like if you come from a very loving family, you feel appreciated, but you're not going to leave home, you know what I mean? But our society seems to have a really high turnover. There's not so many Bhagavatshas, not so many older devotees anymore. Maybe every 5 years if you came back, and those would be a whole new
Yeah, there's definitely something to that. And, you know, we're trying to promote that. Prabhupada certainly tried to promote it. That it is kind of a phenomenon that we have the most personal philosophy. And amongst, like, religious societies, we have a lot of the most impersonal dealings with each other. I just read something the other day. Somebody said they talked to somebody had been coming to temple, like, as a guest for 20 years or something. And then somebody asked him, why don't you just join up? And he said, well, I've watched the way you treat new guests, you know, so nice. But the way you treat the members is not very nice. I'd rather be a permanent guest. So that we laugh, but, you know, somebody did a study in America also of different religions. They said the Hare Krishnas have by far the most philosophy, but the way they treat each other is not very good. A lot of that might be because devotees are very much afraid of intimate relationships, and, you know, coming to their past life was very screwed up, and so we want to cultivate that much more. And I think it's getting much better though, but. They say that other religions, they say people might join a religion for a philosophy or this and that, but they stay because they make friends. And in all our preaching, we want to make friends and be loving. And we can't go too far with that. So it's like, you know, somebody that doesn't understand what real spiritual intimacy is, you know, that might create a lot of problems too. But, and some people leave because of their own offensive mentality. You know, there's all kinds of reasons. We've got a lot of old guys around here. I'm pretty old. Mahaksha, how old are you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Bhagavan, how old are you?
Yeah.
Oh, you're kids. Huh? But you've been around like 30, 40 years, right?
35.
Yeah, some stay. Yeah. Manujanam Sahasreshu, that's also there, but we shouldn't, like, we should be trying to keep everybody, trying to be very loving and caring, and, you know. Lord Chaitanya said, Vaishnava Seva Nama Sankirtan. By these two things, Dui Pavi Shigra, Shri Krishna Charan, you get quickly the lotus feet of Krishna just by serving the devotees and chanting the holy name. So if everybody has that mood of serving the devotees, and everybody feels like I'm not a very great devotee, I have to serve the devotee, then everybody will be very, very happy, and the atmosphere will be so blissful that more and more people want to join. Of course, always a few might go away. Even from the spiritual world, people go away. You know, we did. So, you know, that tendency is still there. We left the spiritual world, so we have that tendency to reject Krishna also. But we want to help everybody to not activate that propensity. So we want to make it nice. So we should be thinking like that, how to keep people lovingly it's Kali Yuga, so there's so many dysfunctional families. Right? Yeah.
Another factor in all of this is that there's been a complete demographic shift in the way it's voted. Now we have 96% of our voters have never looked independent, and they don't attend on a daily basis. They're not the less voters.
They what?
They are not the less voters.
Yes, that's right.
So we have a kind of hankering in many ways for the good old days. In those very early days of the movement, I mean, there was only the 10% of everybody lived in the temple, but that just doesn't happen anymore. I don't think it never can happen again. Already, like I said, 96% of our voters live outside the temple, so they don't attend the temple on a regular daily basis. And on the morning walk one time in Vrindavan, in Los Angeles, on a Sunday morning, the devotees were walking across the park to church, and people were arriving for the early morning service. And Prabhupada pointed and he said, this is what our temples will be like in the future. People will have their households and their lives that they have to conduct, and they have their homes, their hands, side of the soul, come to the temple on different regulations. I think we're getting very easily falling into the trap of thinking, oh, it's all wrong, something's wrong. But something is very bright also all over the world. And we need to see that. And the only reason anything else goes on is because this one goes on.
Is that right?
It's because this one goes on.
Yeah.
Because this one exists, because Srila Prabhupada took the trouble to establish this one, then even those who have left this one and do what they need to do next, still, if there was no this one, they wouldn't be doing that.
That's right. They would have never heard of Krishna. And we need to have a really good atmosphere so when those people that don't live in the temple come to the temple, they're very inspired. You know, that it's what the book says, and that devotees are willing also to go everywhere. And I mean, it's becoming like amazing how many places there are, how many devotees there are everywhere, spread out all over the place. How many home programs are going on all over the world. You know, people have temples in their homes. So many people have full-on, you know, temples in their homes, at least something, and they're following in very strictly a lot of their householders. Sometimes more so than the devotees that live in the temple. And that's just going to keep increasing. And we just have to try to keep up with it. And I know, like my godmother, Ganapati Maharaj in America, he travels all over America all the time. He just concentrates to go to devotees' homes and have a few devotees and just have like 1 week Bhagavatam study or something. Because he saw that, you know, they're not reading that much, they're sincere, but, you know, they don't get that much association. But when someone comes, they're very... But if they get a taste for reading the Bhagavatam, then they'll keep doing it. So he had to interact, you know, a lot of discussion and, you know, a specific chapter or something, and they study it, and they know he's coming, and everybody's really happy about it. We need you to do that. We need everyone to do that. You know, as we get more and more of the so-called old devotees, you know, doing that, they're freed up now from family responsibilities and everything, and take up that greater family, which is now like millions of devotees, though. All over the world. At least everywhere I go, every time I go, there's more and more devotees and more people want you to come to their house. And it's not easy to keep up.
The fact in all that is important. Prabhupada made it that failure is the pillar of success.
Yeah.
And there may be so many failures and shortcomings, but I'm reminded of the example of Thomas Edison, who conducted 10,000 experiments before he got a light bulb that worked. And along the way, people get safe, they work you know, give it up to him. It's not working. So, well, I know that doesn't work with that. So I've been successful in that sense.
Yeah.
I know that doesn't work. So we are a movement, the Krishna consciousness of movement, and things need to move, things need to change, and things need to be refined, but it is a process of refining.
Yeah, and if you don't, the only people that don't make any mistakes are people that don't do anything.
Yeah.
If you,
people lose that
seed,
generally people fail.
A failure, you're just supposed to learn from your mistakes. Thomas Edison, they'd ask him, aren't you discouraged? And he'd say, well, now I know 13,000 things that don't work, so I'm making a lot of progress. And one time his whole thing burned down. Everything, and then they ask him, you know, and he said, well, there goes all my mistakes, you know, everything is going, now I can start fresh. You know? So he did more inventions practically than anybody. The Smithsonian Institute has a whole building just for him, you know. That attitude is very good.
Actually, Prabhupada is actually the best example, because by the time he left to go on travel to America, you could look back on everything he tried to do up to that point, and it was a failure. Being successful and doing what he wanted to do. And there's one letter where he wrote back to somebody and he said, yes, the prospects do not look very good, but I'm not a man who's easily discouraged.
Yeah, when he first went to America too, he used to go down and check the schedule for ships going back. And he'd be really discouraged that Cynthia misses. She said when Prabhupada would come back, you know, at night from, and he'd be looking out the window and saying, today nothing, and then he'd just cheer up again. But tomorrow will be better, you know. Because he was in ecstasy to serve his guru's mission. And the academics will say that one of them wrote, and he's actually, you know, a friend of the movement, but when he wrote some history of his kind, he said, but the followers of Bhaktivedanta Swami, they loved him in spite of all the mistakes he made, you know, because they just loved him. But, you know, we don't see those things as mistakes. And I just read another thing, Prabhupada, you know, in, was it 75, he was predicting the war between Russia and America, and devotees were getting worried, you know. And when it didn't happen, of course, I remember Ramaswar, he got really worried, and he asked Prabhupada, what can happen to stop it? Prabhupada said, well, if the Russians become enough Krishna conscious, then it won't happen. And that's actually one of the things that really inspired devotees for the early preaching in Russia. But then when devotees asked Prabhupada, why didn't that war happen? He said, well, Krishna changed his mind. Not like Prabhupada made a mistake and, you know, he was just making his prediction and he was just saying something, you know. It was conditional. They give so many stupid examples, but, you know, he was just being utilized by Krishna. And you can say, well, he made a mistake to make this person a big leader, or why, you know, why didn't he know better, but that's Krishna's doing everything.
I think so. We need to know the root cause of that problem, and that is within our hearts we're dealing with the disease of meditation and nirvana.
Of which?
Meditation and nirvana. The whole prayer we offer through the program is that we come from a society that's full of meditation and nirvana. And that is infecting our hearts and we bring it with us. And to become pure from that is a very painstaking process.
Right. Many factors are there in our conditioning that makes us act in such ways. So we need to cultivate loving exchanges with the devotees and with everybody who comes to the temple. Right? Okay.
You're a very good example, Maharaj. You are very approachable, and I always appreciate that. I remember Prabhupada in Vrindavan, his room was always open in the evening about 5 o'clock for about 2 hours. Anyone could go in Rickshaw Street Sweeper, don't sit with Parapan. Our problem is that we're our leaders are too rude. And I'm not talking about you, Mark, as you're a good example of the opposite. But Prabhupada really stressed in the beginning that we should establish communities where we could show how we can live together, you know, simply. And if we had really stuck with that right from the beginning, we'd be really well situated now for telling people how to deal with the current collapse of this entire oil society.
That's right. But it's never too late.
No.
No.
To start plowing the fields. But it's not easy, but once we do it, I'm sure we'll be very, very happy. And some, like Shivram Mama, is really pushing that in Hungary to do a lot of really good farming, real cow protection. Because cow protection means you have to work the oxen also.
Well, let's not forget the cow protection that's been going on such as that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going on. We're doing it in many places. And it's a beginning. It's a beginning of loving relationships, too, because to work with cows, you have to really love them and really take care of them. They're not like dogs or something. You can just leave them out on their own all the time and they'll go hunting or something. You know. And they reciprocate. And Krishna reciprocates when you take care of cows. Yeah.
If you need to love cows and dogs and animals, you brought a situated wing for me to come to the West. You're my jewel. A jewel is very valued. Really appreciated value. And is there a big program to connect? There's a lot of programs to connect with. Indian devotees and old devotees are pretty much all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of programs like that.
Like what?
To connect with, reconnect with older devotees or devotees that left as a post program.
Yeah, it's happening more and more actually. Some places, you know, really exceptional, like Chopadi and, you know, and many other temples are trying to follow that mold. Russia's working in a lot of places they're really working on. And individual devotees are, you know, because devotees are taking a lot of energy. And we have this conflict resolution, you know, which is quite helpful. Would be nice if we have to move into conflict avoidation and whatever, you know, how to live in such a way to avoid these conflicts and letting them build up over years and years and years, you know. Because there always will be, you know, disagreements and everything. But if we, you know, if we just work in such a way to communicate, you know, what's going on, and not be afraid to associate with devotees or to, you know, try to help a devotee even though they may not appreciate it sometimes. And, you know, Kali Yuga, like when a person's really sick, you know, anywhere you touch them, it might be very, very painful. And they think you're trying to hurt them, and you're really helping them. And the medicine may taste really bad, right? So now they may call this medicine that doesn't taste bad anymore, but, you know, then it doesn't have the same effect either. Because Ayurveda, that bad taste is a very important part of what the body, how the body reacts to it. You know, it's not just from digesting it. But we want to have all these things in loving communities. And so we need to work on it. Anybody can start one, great. There are many devotees doing in a small way, little communities, even a few devotees, a few cows, farming, living by that. Find them all over the world. They're not like famous. They're not getting rich or anything, but they're living. They don't want to get big and rich. And, you know, yeah.
What problem did explain that you go back to really examining everything right back to its roots, find a solution to the problem now. And actually, democracy is impersonal. It's ruled by nature, it's rule of law, it's the rule of a person. Nobody really can see to change anything. Everything's on change at all. So we're all sort of, we've graduated like a circle, we've grasped ourselves up to rules and regulations. Nobody has the power to do anything, no matter how many good people you've got. And I think personally that's the problem in our society. We don't know how to empower individuals.
Demon crazy.
Democracy.
There's a famous TV show in Indonesia. I was in one shop and I saw it. It's called Demo Crazy. And they're actually criticizing the government. You know, you could see like what was going on. I couldn't understand it, but you know, it's what it's about. Demo Crazy. You don't say demon crazy. But Prabhupada did say that we need many kings, you know, many leaders and that are rishis. I mean, we need many saintly people to guide everyone else. That's why Prabhupada concentrated on developing brahmanas, because the world is full of vaishyas and sudras and kshatriya types. But because they have no proper guidance, they're creating chaos. And there's very few Brahmins, so we're trying to, you know, if Vaishnava becomes the best Brahmana, then we can influence all these other people. They do their business and do their work for Krishna. We can make those kind of arrangements. Well, that's probably enough. I'm around for a while today, and if anybody wants to guide me. I haven't seen, I know many of the leaders are quite approachable. If you're in the right place. But Prabhupada is always there in his books, waiting for all of us to connect with him. We have a great society, actually. In the world, you won't find anything anywhere near as good, what to speak of better. And Krishna everywhere, and devotees are worshiping Krishna so nicely for so many years. It's an amazing thing when you think about it. And Prabhupada took all these people coming from the Nirvishesha Shini buddies, and they're all worshiping deities. We're still working on the real Shini buddies, the Japanese and the Chinese. They really go for it. And get exposed, you know. And the spirit soul is not nervous issues anybody, only the mind and the conditioning. So anyone who, you know, gets exposed to kirtan, they're naturally attracted and they get purified. And if they get friendly association with devotees, they want to join up. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Radhamana Nishwara ki jai. Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai.
Jai.